Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Times Business Podcast. I'm Callum Jones. This week, with two of Britain's biggest banks updating investors, I'm joined by Catherine Griffiths, our banking editor, and James Dean, our US business editor in New York. First, with Wall Street earnings season in full swing, let's hear from the boss of JP Morgan.
If this administration can make breakthroughs in taxes and infrastructure regulatory reform, we have become one of the most bureaucratic, confusing, litigious societies on the planet. It's almost an embarrassment being an American citizen traveling around the world and listening to the stupid shit we have to deal with in this country. And, you know, at one point, we all have to get our act together or we won't do what we're supposed to do for the average Americans. And unfortunately, people write about the thing like it's for corporations. It's not for corporations. Competitive taxes are important for business and business growth, which is important for jobs and wage growth. You know, honestly, we should be ringing that alarm bell, every single one of you, every time you talk to a client.
Jamie Dimon there, with quite a broadside against the Washington establishment. James, where did this come from?
I think it sums up his frustration with, it's not just necessarily the current administration, but it's also Washington more broadly. I mean, he seems to be very frustrated at a lack of movement right now on a load of key Trump policies. So that would be tax cuts, mainly also infrastructure spending. Let's be honest, things that would benefit his bank, although he couches it in terms of benefiting Americans more generally. But he's always been a little bit anti-Washington, to be totally honest. He was kind of the same with President Obama as well. He just sees politicians as being, and the Washington has been a bit clunky, not very good at getting important things through. But I think his frustration just shared with other bank chiefs, although they haven't expressed them quite as forcefully as him. Yeah, I think that's what it is. I think it just kind of sums up his general frustration, and especially at the moment with kind of Donald Trump's healthcare legislation being held up in Congress and, you know, increasingly looking like it's going to fail completely. These important things that he talks about, you know, the tax cuts and infrastructure, are less likely to go through. It's bad for the bank, and, or as he says, it's bad for Americans more generally.
This was a man, though, who, if I remember correctly, back in November, was linked to the Treasury Secretary job when President Trump first won the election. Were those reports well off the mark?
Well, I think they would have tapped up quite a few different people. I mean, leaders of the US Treasury have been bankers in the past, and Jamie Dimon is the boss of the largest bank in the US. So there's certainly quite a few names going around. I mean, as I'm sure we know already, Gary Cohn, who is second in command at Goldman Sachs, is currently President Trump's chief economic advisor. He was tapped for the Treasury role as well. There are a lot of names flying around, even Lloyd Blankfein himself, the boss of Goldman Sachs. So, yeah, I mean, they were wide of the mark in the end, to be honest. Nobody knew what on earth was going to happen. Yeah, I mean, he may well have been tipped at one point, but I guess it just didn't happen in the end.
Of course. And so all the Wall Street giants have been reporting over the past few days. What have been the standout moments for you?
I think the most interesting so far has been Morgan Stanley's performance. So Morgan Stanley is the sixth largest of, you know, the big six US banks behind Goldman Sachs. Put in a really good performance, actually, which made it an outlier with the rest of the banks. I mean, the performance generally was good, just not quite as good as people were hoping. There was a big hit to fixed income trading, be it government bonds, currencies, commodities, kind of across the board. And they fell across the board. But at Morgan Stanley, the fall was a lot less considerable. especially compared to Goldman Sachs, where, you know, fixed income trading fell off a cliff. It dropped by 40%. And in fact, Morgan Stanley's traders put in a better performance than Goldman Sachs. And, you know, Goldman Sachs' fixed income trading desk is a lot bigger than Morgan Stanley's. So the bank performed exceptionally well. I think kind of looking at it in, you know, taking a look at it now that it's all happened, I think the Morgan Stanley performance kind of, the strength of their performance, I think, is linked to the work that James Gorman, their chief executive, has done to refocus the bank on other things. So it could be asset management, wealth management. They posted good increases in revenues in these kind of departments. They're growing more strongly than at the other banks. And also then you've got this strong performance, or stronger performance than its peers, in fixed income trading. And investors were quite happy. They sent the shares up by quite a bit earlier this week after they reported. Generally across the banks, as I say, it was another decent quarter. Obviously bank shares are riding high still after the presidential election, although not quite at the highs they hit earlier this year. Basically, the third and fourth quarters this year are going to be the most telling, because there's kind of there's signs now that the US economy might be slowing down a bit, especially when it comes to industrial production or kind of just general business outlook surveys. These are all dropping off at the moment. So when you add in the fact that we haven't seen the tax cuts that the banks wanted, we haven't seen the infrastructure plans for this $1 trillion spending plan from President Trump, then we may well see a bit of a tailing off towards the end of the year. But I mean, they're all in a good position, the banks.
Catherine, how closely followed have these this week's releases been in London over the past few days?
They've been very closely followed, as they always are, because the US banks are so big and they reflect so greatly the state of the economy, as indeed our own banks do. But one big difference is the interest rates in both countries. Of course, in the US, we've seen 3 rate rises since December, which, broadly speaking, is good news for banks. But actually, in many ways, the US banks haven't perhaps capitalised on that as much as they might have done. Whereas here, we haven't had a rate rise for a long time and people are hoping for one, but there are certainly lots of people who don't think we will get a rate rise till perhaps even 2019 or so. So what's tricky to know over here is how much sort of in the share price of, say, Lloyds or Barclays or whoever, there's a sort of optimism about rate rises and how much that isn't the case. I think when we do see results starting here in Britain this week, we'll see some very sound profits being made, as is normal, to be perfectly honest, from the just straightforward, plain, simple lending into the UK economy. But like with the US banks, we'll see a slowdown in some areas of investment banking. Another big difference between the UK and the US banks will, of course, be simply that, say, Barclays, which has a fairly sizable investment bank, earns a lot of its money in dollars. And so there's a benefit to it by reporting in sterling. That will make it look pretty good. And then another strand of banking reporting here in Britain will be what happens to the banks which have a wider footprint. So HSBC and Standard Chartered, which report in dollars and are largely exposed to emerging markets. And there's a sort of a built-in expectation with both of those banks that they're doing well and they're going to do better. So the risk there is that, in fact, they won't necessarily look as they won't fulfil that promise when they report results.
Lloyd's, of course, now fully back in private, under private ownership. What are we expecting it to say next week when it reports?
I think we're expecting it to say that the economy has softened a little bit, and we're probably expecting it to say that because of Brexit and all the kind of uncertainty that brings, there has been a bit of a slowing in investment decisions by businesses. People will seize on those statements and panic a little bit, but the results of what is Britain's biggest retail bank, which has a kind of a quarter to a third share of the market, will be quite good. It's, people have described it in the past as a bit of a cash machine, and since it's kind of worked through most of its problems, that is really what it is.
And there was plenty of speculation not so long ago about the future of its boss at the company. Now it would appear that he's staying put, though.
Yes, who the big question, which someone with a very big ego was probably likes a lot, as to whether they are going to stay at their company or not. Antonio Horta Osorio is seen to have done a very, very good job at Lloyd's in the last 5-6 years. I think that if another opportunity came along for him, he likes big jobs, he likes taking on restructuring projects. I should imagine that he would be quite interested in taking on another big meaty job. The role that he is linked with a lot is the chief executive role at HSBC. But who knows, if nothing suitable comes up for him, then he's certainly sort of laid the groundwork to stay at Lloyds and do another 3-year plan. And his investors would certainly be very happy about that.
And we've certainly been reading and hearing a lot about Barclays, perhaps for the wrong reasons from their perspective over recent weeks. But in terms of the overall state of the business, pretty good.
Yes, I think Barclays will probably have quite a good set of figures, partly because when the US banks underperform in investment banking, Barclays sort of outperforms in comparison for a variety of reasons. It's partly due to its kind of mix of businesses. And as I say, a big benefit for it is the fact that it does a lot of its business in dollars and will report in sterling next week. But in other areas, it's got a fairly straightforward business. Its retail banking business is pretty good. It has been a bit accident prone in the last few months. And actually, when you talk to sort of senior Citi figures, they do still ask whether there's a fundamental culture problem there, which actually I've been surprised to hear, because certainly since Jess Staley, the chief executive who came over from JP Morgan, started, there's been a lot of goodwill towards him. So interesting to hear that Barclays hasn't really, in people's minds, hasn't really sort of put all those issues to bed from the past.
That's about all we've got time for this week. Plenty coming up over the next few days, so do keep up to date with the latest via our digital and print editions. And make sure to subscribe to this podcast to get a new episode each week. My thanks to Catherine in the studio and to James in New York, and to you for listening.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.